I remember the way the case file felt heavier than it should have when I pulled it from the archive shelf. Not because of its thickness, but because of the years pressed inside it. Years measured in flyers that faded on telephone poles, in tips that arrived hopeful and left exhausted, in a name that never fully disappeared from the city's awareness, even as time kept moving forward. Because some absences refused to settle into the past, and this one had followed investigators, reporters, and a family, through seasons of silence and sudden noise, through moments when nothing fit together, and moments when everything threatened to come apart. And when new information finally surfaced, it did not arrive cleanly or with relief, but with the same unease that had marked the case from the beginning. A reminder that answers often come at a cost, and that closure, when it arrives at all, is rarely simple, because what had started as a missing person investigation had grown into something larger, something entangled with other disappearances, other questions, and a suspect whose name began appearing in more than one file, forcing us to reopen old evidence, re-examine long-held assumptions, and confront the reality that the truth had not been waiting quietly to be found, but had been moving alongside us the entire time, just out of reach, until we could finally say the name, Keyshia Jacobs. When Keyshia Jacobs was first reported missing, the information we had was limited, but it was not unusual for a case to begin that way. She was a young woman from Richmond, Virginia, known to family and friends as someone who stayed in regular contact, someone whose routines, while not rigid, were familiar enough that her sudden absence raised immediate concern. From the start, those closest to her insisted that disappearing without explanation was out of character, and that insistence shaped how we approached the early hours of the investigation. Initial interviews focused on establishing her last known movements, her personal relationships, and any recent changes in her life that might explain why she had not come home. We reviewed phone records, social media activity, and financial transactions, looking for patterns or disruptions that could tell us where to look next. What emerged instead was a picture that felt incomplete, a series of normal actions that abruptly stopped without providing a clear reason. As days turned into weeks, the case began to attract broader attention, in part because of the family's persistence, and in part because of the growing sense that something had gone wrong. Search efforts expanded beyond the immediate area, with law enforcement coordinating with volunteers to canvass neighborhoods, parks, and stretches of roadway where she might have traveled. Each search ended the same way, with no physical evidence that could confirm where she had gone or what had happened to her. The lack of progress forced us to rely heavily on tips, many of which were well-intentioned but difficult to verify. Every reported sighting required follow-up. Every rumor demanded assessment. And each lead carried the risk of pulling resources away from more promising avenues. Still, we followed them, because missing person cases often hinge on a single overlooked detail, and the cost of ignoring even a weak lead can be high. Over time, the investigation settled into a pattern that is familiar in long-term missing person cases. The file remained open, but active leads became less frequent, and the work shifted from immediate response to sustained vigilance. Detectives rotated in and out, each reviewing the same materials, hoping to see something the others had missed, while the family continued to advocate publicly, keeping Keyshia's name in circulation and reminding the community that the case was unresolved. Years passed, and with each passing year, the questions became more difficult to answer. Evidence that might have been useful early on was no longer available. Memories had faded, and the context surrounding her disappearance had changed. Yet the case never closed, because there was nothing to close it with. No definitive explanation that could account for her absence or confirm her fate. What we did have was a growing awareness that Keyshia's disappearance did not exist in isolation. As time went on, other cases began to surface. Cases involving women who had gone missing under circumstances that were not identical, but shared enough similarities to warrant attention. At first, the connections were tentative, more a matter of professional instinct than concrete evidence, but they stayed with us, lingering in the background as we continued to review incoming information. By the time the investigation reached its seventh year, the work had become as much about endurance as discovery. When she was a kid, she helped it. Breathless man kept on her feet. He had taken her seat and waited. We maintained contact with the family, updated records as new technology became available, and kept the case visible within the department. There was no single moment when the direction changed, no dramatic revelation that altered everything at once, but rather a gradual accumulation of information that suggested the story was not finished. That understanding set the stage for what came next. Because when new developments finally emerged, they did not erase the years of uncertainty that came before them. Instead, they reframed them, forcing us to look back at the entire timeline with fresh eyes and reconsider what we thought we knew about the disappearance of Keshe Jacobs. The breakthrough did not arrive with a single phone call or a neatly packaged confession, but through the convergence of unrelated investigations that began to overlap in ways we could not ignore. When a suspect was arrested in connection with another case, information collected during that arrest prompted a review of additional files, including long unsolved disappearances from the region. This is a process that happens more often than the public realizes, as evidence gathered for one purpose is re-examined for its relevance elsewhere. As we reviewed the materials associated with the arrest, certain details stood out, not because they provided immediate answers, but because they echoed questions we had been asking for years. Locations, timelines, and behavioral patterns suggested possible links, and while none of this constituted proof, it was enough to justify a closer look. We reopened the Keshe Jacobs file with renewed urgency, cross-referencing old leads against new data. Part of that process involved revisiting digital records, including surveillance footage that had been collected early in the investigation, but had not yielded actionable results at the time. Advances in technology allowed us to enhance and analyze that footage more effectively, revealing movements and interactions that were previously indistinct. This was not a dramatic transformation, but it provided clarity where there had once been ambiguity. At the same time, forensic efforts were underway in another area where human remains had been recovered and were undergoing identification. When those remains were confirmed to be Keshe Jacobs, the investigation entered a new phase, one defined by evidence rather than absence. The confirmation answered one question while raising many others, because knowing what happened to someone is not the same as understanding how or why. The arrest of the suspect did not immediately resolve those questions, but it established a framework for continued investigation. We examined known associations, travel records, and any documented interactions that could place the suspect in proximity to Keshe around the time of her disappearance. Each piece of information was evaluated on its own merits, with care taken not to draw conclusions that the evidence could not support. Throughout this period, communication with the family was handled with particular sensitivity, as they were processing both the confirmation of Keshe's death and the possibility that accountability might follow. Our role was to provide verified information and to be clear about what was known, what was suspected, and what remained unproven. This distinction mattered because speculation can cause harm, especially in cases that have already inflicted years of uncertainty. As investigative threads continued to intersect, we coordinated with other jurisdictions, sharing findings and requesting records that might clarify whether the suspect's activities extended beyond a single case. This collaborative approach was essential, as patterns of disappearance do not always respect geographic boundaries, and understanding them often requires cooperation across agencies. The evidence did not unfold all at once, and there were moments when progress stalled, but the direction was clear. The case was no longer defined solely by what we did not have, but by what we could now examine, test, and verify. For the first time in years, the investigation moved forward with a sense of momentum, grounded in documented facts rather than hope alone. With the identification of Keshe Jacobs' remains and the ongoing examination of the suspect's activities, the case reached a point where its boundaries were more clearly defined. The work shifted from searching for answers in the abstract to assembling a factual record that could withstand scrutiny, both in court and in public understanding. This required patience, because each step had to be supported by evidence rather than inference. We continued to document findings methodically, ensuring that timelines were accurate and that every conclusion was traceable to a verified source. This approach was not about caution for its own sake, but about preserving the integrity of the investigation and honoring the seriousness of what had occurred. In cases like this, the margin for error is small, and the consequences of missteps are significant. The broader implications of the suspect's arrest were examined alongside the specifics of Quiche's case, with investigators assessing whether connections to other disappearances could be substantiated. Some questions remained open, and others were answered definitively, but all were addressed through the same process of evidence-based review. This consistency was essential in maintaining clarity amid complexity. For the family, the transition from uncertainty to confirmed loss marked a profound change, one that did not bring resolution so much as a different set of realities. Our interactions with them reflected that understanding, focusing on transparency and accuracy rather than reassurance. The role of law enforcement at this stage was not to offer closure, but to provide facts and to pursue accountability where the evidence allowed. As the case moved forward, its history remained an important reference point, reminding us of how long it had taken to reach this stage and how many opportunities for answers had passed without resolution. That history informed how we handled the present, reinforcing the need for diligence and restraint in every decision. What remains of the investigation is defined by documented outcomes rather than speculation. Quiche Jacobs is no longer missing, and the circumstances of her disappearance are no longer entirely unknown. The work continues within established legal and investigative frameworks, guided by evidence collected over years and by new information that emerged only recently. This is where the record stands, grounded in what has been confirmed and open to what may still be proven, with no conclusions drawn beyond what the facts support and no narrative imposed beyond what the evidence allows.